Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. For all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, today's guest is a really good friend of mine. I met him a couple years ago, actually probably a few years ago, and he's spoken at multiple events for us and actually writes for us in Canvas Magazine. Greg Kotikia is one of the more thoughtful people I have come across. He is a guy who sees it from a variety of angles. He understands how the landscape has changed, and he is now in tune with a new generation of worker. Specifically, Greg Kotikia is an award-winning technology executive with more than 25 years of experience in high-tech products and services. As CEO and co-founder of eBilling Hub, he grew the company from inception to establish it in a leading market position that led to its sale to Thomson Reuters. Today, he teaches business-to-business marketing and entrepreneurial leadership at the University of Pittsburgh's Katz School of Business. Greg Kotikia is a really, really good guy. He's a big Pitt football guy, and I just am thrilled that he took the time to spend with me the other day. So without further ado, have a listen to this wonderful conversation with Greg Kotikia, and happy holidays to all of you. How are things, man?
Pichikino Nito.
Yeah.
That's the way they used to say it. They used to say that. I'm a little old, though, so I'm allowed to say that, right? How are things? Things are great. Things are great. We're getting motor along here at the Intergalactic University of Pittsburgh and helping out a number of startup companies and having fun. So, and I have no complaints.
Well, that's good. What's the weather like up there right now?
Cold.
Is it?
Getting colder.
Oh, man. I got to come up there in February. My son, I think, has got a hockey tournament up there. And we're going to be up there, and it's when the Flyers play the Pens.
Ooh.
In Heinz Field.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, that's outside, but that's in February. That's outside in February. That's too cold.
That'd be cold too.
Well, yeah, I don't think I can do that. And everybody used to say, you know, hey, you're from Erie. Shouldn't you be used to this? Like the other day, I was in the ice rink, and I must have had four or five layers on, and they looked at me like, you're supposed to be this big guy. And he says, didn't you grow up in Erie? And I said, yeah, but I'm getting old. And what happens is, the blood thins and the bones get a little bit brittle and, the skin gets a little loose and it's just,
It's not pretty. It's not pretty, I'm telling you.
It's not a good visual. So, So anyway, so things are good, huh? So you're teaching away and you're helping with startups.
I'm creating startups and we're commercializing new technology. We got good things happening here.
So with technology, do you think there's another boom coming our way?
I do. I'm always optimistic. I'm a technology optimist, though, Mark.
Yeah.
I do think that we will get another round. I mean, I particularly what I see here is a lot of health IT stuff. Started with a little bit with wearables. Now everybody wears like three or four of them. I saw an ad on TV just last week for one that helps your posture, so you make sure you sit up straight.
Wearable technology?
Yeah, it was wearable technology, and it was a little device you put on your on your shirt to make sure that you were sitting up straight or standing up straight.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought that was a nun's ruler that did that. But no, yeah. This is an actual electronic device.
Yeah. You need the ruler, the nun with the ruler slapping the knuckles. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's what I thought it was, but I clearly was wrong.
That's crazy, you know? I mean, that's what I mean. Are we headed for this just, you know, it's funny. I watch these commercials and I see the Google, whatever is it, Google Home. And, yeah. You know, I'm wondering, really? I mean, that's, we're getting to a point where it's, did you ever see the movie WALL-E?
Oh, yeah.
And where they, you know, they
at the
were
very
all,
end, they're all fat, sitting around, they don't do anything.
Riding around in floating chairs. You know, they can change the color of their uniform with the flip of a button, and they're drinking their turkey dinner or whatever, and, you know, they've got a monitor in front of them. Although that's kind of my kids. You know, they're well, you see these kids.
Yeah, well,
and
yeah,
the, I mean, it's not even
in it,
it's not just the kids. It's a device is like attached to them. My daughter, I sarcasm doesn't seem to work on these kids either. I walked in this morning and she's in bed. She's still got it. So they're not off this week. They still have to go to school. And I said, I look at her. I said, aren't you getting up? And I pull the sheets back and she's already on her phone. She's already looking, watching video on her phone. And I wonder, you know, if it's an epidemic and you see it, you're firsthand with these kids.
It can be addictive. And I mean that in all seriousness, that you can be addicted to screens just like you can be to alcohol or drugs or relationships or sex or anything else. And there are actual signs. I had to take a picture of it the other day in one of the lobbies of one of the schools where basically where you're entering into the hallway where the elevators are, and it says, you know, lift your head up and look around you because you're going to run into somebody.
Yeah.
And so it's a very, there's a lot of wonderful things about technology and that improves our lives and makes things fun or exciting or easier to do than ever before. There's also downsides you need to protect yourself against, right? It's just the nature of everything. Nothing's all upside.
No,
I hope though that people work to manage the downside and realize the benefits of that. That always worries me.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a unique time, you know, and you know, it's funny, Greg. I gotta tell you, gosh, it's been three? Well, you spoke at our first little summit, and.
Yep.
You know, we had our third one just in October. I had to bump it from May to October because Drupal was this year in May, so I moved it to October, and it was just a lot of fun. I mean, it's gotten, you know, we did it at Emory for the second time of the year, and we have a ball. I mean, last year we went bowling. This year we did this World Championship of Trivia, and everybody had a blast. We had a great group, and we had super speakers. You know, the irony is that your presentation, your fact that you put out there is something that not only do I mean, I still preach it. In fact, I think I was talking about it this morning with someone. And, you know, I was talking to a printer in Philadelphia. And the number has changed. But if you remember, it was your fact and figure in the B2B environment. It was the corporate executive board found that 57% of the buying process was done before human interaction takes place. Now, it's probably closer to 70% now, but it's the B2B process. And, you know, obviously the B2C, it's like 99%. But, you know, for our industry, that's a jaw dropper. That's a, you know, that should be like, whoa, we better, you know, and it's, so that's why I was asking about technology, is that do you see this, especially with startups and, you know, I'm in this traditional world where they're unable to let go of that recipe in the face of the clear data that they don't want somebody knocking on their door. You need to develop the top of the funnel in a different way. Doesn't mean that you know, the bottom of the funnel, you're still going to get fantastic people, but you need fantastic people. But I mean, do you see that? And as you get into this, I mean, do you not just talk about the technology, but do you talk about the recipe for engagement and developing community?
Yeah, I mean, I just walked out of the meeting I was in just before this, and we're an institute inside the University of Pittsburgh. And what we were talking about is customers' journey, customers' experience, people, whether they're, you know, all of our different stakeholders, from students to entrepreneurs to economic development organizations, it's the exact same habit, right? Mm-hmm. Just like they do in their consumer life, what are they looking for? They want to find the latest in technology at the University of Pittsburgh to license, or find a way to get themselves educated on how to go from idea to commercialization. They, you know, it's not a salesperson isn't calling them outbound asking what their needs are. They're looking for us and, you know, finding information, finding content, looking for information. We have to manage that funnel all the way through until there's a contact made. And it is the exact same challenges, issues, processes that any business would have to look at in terms of engaging their prospects and customers. Exact same thing. So, you know, we've instituted marketing automation and a lot of Net Promoter Score and all kinds of other things. And we're just one institute inside a very large 227-year-old university, you know, founded before the founding of the United States. So it's impacted everyone. No matter what kind of business you are.
Are you, and they're doing that in the recruitment of students?
Getting students involved in programs, making sure faculty is aware and can, our role is to also commercialize research that is done there. And we have a very large research community of $800 million a year in federally funded research that goes through the University of Pittsburgh. So a lot of inventions and creations and new technology comes from faculty, and we want to help them get that into people's hands where it can make a difference and not just into published papers. We work with economic development organizations in the community and venture capitalists and angel communities, not only locally but throughout the U.S., that are looking to invest in technology and teams that they want to see get commercialized and build the next generation of technology that is going to solve major problems in whether they're life sciences or information technology or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these things matter. And so it is a marketing process that we need to go through. And the marketing challenges are no different than they are for any other B2B or B2C organization.
Yeah. Well, let me do it. First, let me do a sound check for you. Something just changed. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's just got a little it's gotten a little faded. So I don't know if you just need
on me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Try. Okay, do you want me to?
I don't know if you just need to move a little.
How about, is this better?
Yeah, that's a little bit better. Yeah, that's a little bit better. Absolutely. So, so when you look at small business, I mean, you know, that's the biggest challenge. I mean, and so advice to this world, and you remember it, and you've been gracious enough to do some writing for us, and you know, we put your leadership columns in there, and we love it, and it's gotten good response. But for this small business world that is steeped in tradition, you know, how do they let go? Because, I mean, it's so hard for them to let go of this is what we've always done. But they really do need to incubate these new things. I mean, it's easy to say, look, I'm looking at marketing automation, and we're doing all this stuff, but... You know, like you said, you're a traditional university that's been able to embrace that. Now, maybe you've got the progressive mentality of academia and kids, but how do these small businesses like printers do it?
Yeah, I think you can look at it and get overwhelmed. You can look at it and reject it out of hand. You can look at it and educate yourself. I mean, there's lots of different ways, right? If you reject that out of hand, you're going to lose.
Right.
The reality is right there. But it also doesn't mean that you have to boil the ocean, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, experiment and take your time. You know, read, talk to others, learn from others, see what works for your business. Talk to your customers. Ask them how they like to learn about and that's something we talk about all the time here is customer discovery. Go out and talk to your customers. Ask them how they look for things today, how they find out about stuff, what they read, where they get information. They'll give you a lot of clues about what's changed and what you need to do.
Yeah.
Just don't take those, as we saw in the recent election, don't take those relationships for granted. You need to continually nurture them, ask questions, and be a learner and be inquisitive. And you know, you don't have to say we're going to change everything overnight. Make a plan. Start slowly. Make small bets. You know, so that you bet on some new technology, and if it fails, it's not so costly that it's a game changer for your business. And
right.
So those are all reasonable steps. People like to think of university as you label it a progressive environment or more acceptance change. But you know, when you work at a bureaucracy that is that is as old and established as University of Pittsburgh is, or any other, it's a state-related school.
Yeah.
Change is slow. People have been here for a long time, and you get a lot of, this is the way we do things, and here are the rules, and things like that. So, this has been a journey, too. This has probably been 2 years that we've gone on in terms of slowly moving the bar and changing how we do things. There's fits and starts, but you'll get there.
Well, I mean, yeah, I always liken it to, look, if a bunny rabbit is cornered, and is on their last leg, I mean, they're even going to try to fight back a bit. And, unfortunately, with change coming so rapidly, it seems to me that you've got to anticipate it and say, look, we've got to change. So there's that part. How about the flip side of that, though? Because especially as you being a technology guy and a startup guy, I was speaking the other day in Indiana, and I was telling them that we live in a world where there's just so much data. And you just said something really interesting, because I think there's the flip side of this. Like, hey, printers, you're going to have to change the model. And you're going to have to develop the top of the funnel without that traditional model. But on the flip side, we've got this crunch of data, big data. But it doesn't necessarily replace the sincerity of effort. I mean, like you said, go talk to people. I mean, we're still in a world where you still need to be able to connect. Am I wrong about that?
No, absolutely. Fundamentally, at the end of every transaction is a relationship, and that happens between people.
Right.
That's not been eliminated.
Right.
And that trust is built belly to belly, face to face, eye to eye, right? That's not done in any other way. And how that process starts, though, is radically changed. So, it's just how you get there. And those relationships are really important. And start with, as I said earlier, start with your existing customers. Even some of your new prospects as a secondary resource, asking, be inquisitive, be curious. How did you find us? What did you look for? Where did you begin your search? How long have you been looking? I'm just curious about what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. How about these kids today? And, you know, because I'm really curious, as I'm sure everybody is, and you see this, are we teaching them? Because I saw this jobs report, right? And this jobs report talked about that 65% of the jobs won't be, you know, when my kids are come of age, don't even exist now. Do you guys talk about that? Do you talk about the type of jobs that you will anticipate in the future and the skills needed? Because I wonder if leaders in the business community, well, there's so much pressure on the short term, do you think they're really investing it? But I'm assuming in academia that maybe you guys kick that around a little bit.
The big issue here is, of course, even matching up, making sure that as you aim for the job or category of jobs that you want to go after, are you taking the right courses, and are those courses being valued by your end degree and your eventual employer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the worst thing that can happen for both the university and the student is they get a degree and they can't get a job, right? That's bad for both.
Right.
It's a terrible situation. So there are a lot of actual processes and software programs. Some of them actually started here at Pitt that actually try to resolve those issues to make sure that they're taking the right courses to get employed in the job that they want to get. Forget what the, you know, a lot of coursework too has changed over the years. That you have a, you know, a core set of courses and a lot more electives. The balance between core set and electives has changed dramatically, where the core set is 1/3 and the electives are 2/3. And I think it used to be pretty much the other way around.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more latitude in, you know, what should I take to get the job that I want or the career that I want to have. So, and, you know, that's a good lesson not only for an undergraduate, graduate student at a university thing. That's also really important for you lifelong, right?
I mean,
you have to go back every once in a while and, you know, like you hold the program where, you know, you're meeting other people, you're hearing speakers, you're getting educated, et cetera, so that, you know, those best practices and those things are shared. And those are the kind of things that need to continue to be done throughout your life, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah.
It's the way it works. You've got to continue to be learning and embracing that. And you've got to dedicate yourself to, you know, take an online course. Make sure you finish it, though.
Yeah.
And a lot of people sign up, but they don't necessarily get done with it. But
that's true,
right?
It's absolutely true. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, you're hitting a nerve here. I mean, and that is that you know, we get into a, as you get older, it's hard. I mean, and as a parent, I'm trying to parent in a way that instills that drive, that growth mindset, you know, and where they're constantly striving to be a better version of themselves each and every day, you know. And we have a culture that you know, once you finish the degree and you go off and you get the job, there's a lot of people who are just kind of like, okay, now I'm in the flow, I'm in the river, and it's just carrying me. And yet progress comes from that growth mindset, and it's really, really compelling. And as change and technology keeps coming, you're right. You said it at the beginning, right? I mean, you need to be a learner. You need to be a constant learner. And you know, hopefully that's the thing that this next generation that we're investing in that they're saying, look, we're going to constantly be looking to grow personally, and you know, that will also enable the companies. I just feel like there's so much business out there that's tradition. You know, I'm dealing with a world that I just talked to this guy this morning, and we were and he was lamenting the fact that, you know, times were tough and they lost some business. And I thought to myself, okay, so, you know, this is a telltale sign. Things have got to change. You got to do some things differently. And he was talking about having two great young sales reps. And I wanted to say, that's wonderful, but you're using the same mechanism. You know, right. And I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can still sell and you can still do that the same way, but you better be incubating a different way to create a relationship with the marketplace. And that's that investment. That goes back to that mindset that we don't have. It's almost like an epidemic, don't you think?
Well, if you think, you know, what's changed in the world just in the last 5 years, along 10. I mean, think about, you talked about kids using smartphones. We're coming up on the 10th year of, 2018, of the introduction of the iPhone.
Wow.
I think how radically smartphones have changed our lives. Now, if you got your degree in marketing or sales or business management or finance and accounting in 1975 or 1985 or even 1995, chances are, kids are, you weren't working on an iPhone, right? And that's just one example of the rapid pace or state of change. So, I mean, and there's lots of things in some of those years are pre-internet. I mean, even 1995 was just really at the beginning of the internet.
Right.
So, as a commercial platform. So we're not talking that long, 20-some years ago. So no one has this all mastered. There's a chance to learn. New things are coming about. Embrace those, and you won't be disappointed. And I agree with you. Those lost deals, those disappointments, and sure, they hurt. They hurt when you lose a piece of business or a transaction. But it's also an opportunity to learn.
Right.
And learn, you know, what you're doing, and also reevaluate how you're doing.
Yeah.
But if you're managing your business the way you managed it 5 years ago, chances are you really need to look at it differently. There's plenty of great brands, companies, whatever, that are gone and are dying. Because they continue just to turn the crank and thought that it would just be there forever.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's a different day. I mean, you got to develop a following. I feel like the only sustainable advantage, the only way you can kind of, deal with all the change is have a following. Do you feel like, there will be a backlash when it comes to technology? I mean, do you think
yes.
Maybe all this noise is getting us to a point where maybe we will start to look up and look each other in the eye?
Yeah, I think inevitably there has to be. I was telling my wife, I had a long drive back this weekend while being kind of a mini trip that we took, that in my senior year of college, my paper was Technology and the Human Condition.
Yeah.
And, even in 1982, the impact of technology, both positive and negative, was looked at, and there are equal parts of just resistance to change, lack of embrace, inability to sometimes change, right?
Mm-hmm.
As well as those that look at it and say, this is a better way forward, improves efficiency and effectiveness. This is the, let's not make buggy whips in an era of automobiles, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I think there are pluses and minuses, and we can't embrace it and just look at it as everything is positive when we adopt a new technology. There are equal parts and people that will push back. I think that's healthy. I think that's good. It makes it that we have a critical eye towards it, because before you implement something, and something as vital as your business, which is your big part of anyone's life. If you're an owner or a leader in a business, you want to see that survive and thrive, just like you would a child that you're raising or taking care of. It's another person in the room that doesn't have a voice. And so, it's essential to look at that. And I do think there will be a backlash against technology. There will come in waves where people will say, we have to get our act together. That may come in the form of regulation. That may come in the form of just social attitudes and mores. Who knows? A number of different ways.
Yeah.
But it can't continue at every stage to be the Wild West. Right, these things get to be a part of our culture,
yeah.
And we embrace them, and we put rules and ways that we accept them, and that's a part of accepting the change, I think.
Yeah, I think that. I mean, the thing that makes me nervous is you look, as a parent, I've got 13 and 11, and I think about this from our industry as well. And like I said, I think sometimes we overestimate change in the short term. And so it doesn't mean that what you're doing today, change doesn't mean you literally cut off what you were doing today and throw it out, right? And so
Absolutely not. That
I think we have to impart on our industry and say, look, it's not, but there is that other piece to it that goes, yeah, but okay. Is technology going to create opportunity for jobs, or are we literally going to be floating around in these chairs, fat and happy? And, you guys, so you embrace technology, but that's the fear. And so you guys, and you've seen it because you've been involved in launching so many different technology companies. You see technology as a job creator, do you not?
Well, there's been lots of studies on this, and technology, I think the most recent one that came out of significant came out sometime last year, and they looked at, I think, 140 or 150 years of data, so lots of generations of technology, and at the end of the day, technology has created more jobs than it's destroyed, from going back from the 1800s to today's world. So, certainly we have automated and made it more efficient. Days of agricultural laborers being 8-10% of our society, all the way down to less than 1%, but producing more food than we ever could before, right?
Right.
You do end up with displacement, right? But you end up with other types of jobs.
Right.
You have more service jobs, more caring jobs, more technology jobs, all kinds of things that make those shifts. If you take a look at the story of Pittsburgh, as you well know,
mm-hmm.
Being from Erie, I mean, Pittsburgh is a story of a disrupted, change, massive change inside of a region.
Right.
In a lot of ways, this could have been a ghost town today, easily.
Yeah.
The early 1980s, this town lost pretty much everything. Not only the steel industry collapsed, we used to have 13 or 14 steel mills in the city proper, and today we have none. And those employed hundreds of thousands of people, and that's just in the steel mill, let alone the supply chain that supported them and all the ancillary businesses that fed with off of them and with them to customers all over the globe. And it disappeared in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah.
And so it was a real punch in the gut. But Pittsburgh embraced the difficulties. There were some tough, rough years, definitely, I can tell you, particularly through the 80s. But here we are, and you can barely get online today and look up the city of Pittsburgh and not see something nice about it, or some award that's been given, or some way that it's been acknowledged for the changes that it's made. That's taken a long time, but you could see that it was starting even in the even 10 years after the economic crush that it took. And today it's really thriving.
Yeah.
So it can happen in cities. It can happen in people. It certainly can happen in businesses.
Well, listen, I mean, I keep trying to convince my wife to move there, for crying out loud. My kids and I are in, you know, and so we can be closer to the Stanley Cup champions. But it's a great town. It's a great town. But let me ask you the question, and I don't know if you have the answer to this. But who was the catalyst for that? Who were the catalysts? I mean, do you remember? Was there a specific mayor? Was there a group of people that said, "Hey, we need to anticipate this. This is happening," or did it happen and go, "Well, we can sit here and cry, or we can move"?
It the Pittsburgh comeback story really is one of not realizing it in advance. I mean, we had a steel industry that was prospering, that paid a lot of taxes, created a lot of great lifestyles for the region's employees and laborers, and provided steel worldwide. The government reaped well and could afford, new equipment and beautiful roads and all kinds of things that the governments could do. And the leaders of those corporations did well. So everybody fit in and glowed. As long as steel prices would increase and more steel was consumed, and when competition came along and the marketplace collapsed, we were really faced. I think they call it in drug and alcohol rehab as bottoming out, right?
Right.
We bottomed out as a city.
Right.
And so it did take strong leadership, because there was a lot of finger pointing, blaming, people saying, we're waiting for the steel industry to come back. There was a lot of non-acceptance, et cetera. But it really took cooperation and a lot of learning. So those same entities that suffered didn't finger point. They actually, and I tell people this all the time, it was business leaders,
yeah,
government, university leaders, philanthropists, all kinds of people that said, "I'm going to put Pittsburgh ahead of my own self-interest, and because if Pittsburgh wins, eventually I'll win."
Yeah,
because we'll all win.
Yeah,
and in a rugged individualistic society like the United States, where it's "I got mine and you go get your own," and it's there for you, you don't usually see that level of cooperation. And understanding that that we have to make the whole work.
Yeah.
But I think that is why I believe that Pittsburgh came back, is that it was a massive level of compromise and commitment to the city first. And the business, government, whatever it was, role that people were playing, came in second. And now we're benefiting from the other side. If the government had said, "Hey, we need more taxes, and we got to just raise taxes, and because we're losing businesses," and corporations said, "Hey, I'm just going to abandon this place or move out of town," or anything, across the board, some did, right? It would have been... It would have been a modern day Detroit.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a great analogy, and it is really hard to think in this selfie world, where we take pictures of ourselves and post them on Facebook, thinking that everybody wants to see that. It's a really, really tough thing, and that's a beautiful story. And I agree with that. There's a guy, the guru of strategy, Michael Porter, from Harvard. And I heard him speak a few years ago, and he said, the country has no strategy. He had talked about the fact that they never They never counseled with him. They never asked his advice, and other countries were. And, you know, strategy starts with the marketplace, and so that's a big deal. And so to think about Pittsburgh, you know, community leaders getting in a room and coming together going, you know, we got a major issue. We've hit rock bottom. So what are we going to do? We can go and we can leave, we can cry, or we can rise up and realize that the rising tide raises all boats. And so there is some of that, but it's hard. Boy, that is a hard thing to do in this world when we're addicted to that immediate gratification, you know?
Yeah. And that is a real challenge for all of us to be patient and take that longer-term goal. Michael Porter is absolutely right, and I play in my class a Michael Porter clip that talks about why he got involved with strategy in the first place. And he was working at an organization, and he said, you know, I just realized that we didn't really have a strategy. We said that we did, but we didn't. And he said, I really wanted to solve that issue. Of course, he's gone on to apply, you know, a brilliant methodology and mapping to nations and healthcare industry and general competition, et cetera. And you got to have that, right? You need to have that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think that allows you to, you know, deal with change. And part of strategy is what you said earlier. You know, you keep doing what you're doing, but you got to be investing and incubating in this new stuff. So lastly, let me ask you this. So strategically, where does the University of Pittsburgh football team go from here? They had a huge win. They had a big win, man.
The greatest story of that team, regardless of wins and losses, is James Conner, who came back from cancer diagnosis a little over 2 years ago, sat out a season, came back, and now is the ACC all-time touchdown record holder. He's having a fantastic season, and he's just an inspiration and a wonderful, wonderful kid. I hope he gets, even though he's a junior, I wish he'd stay around a year, but in today's world, he'll probably leave and play his last game next weekend. It's just a marvelous story. And the Pitt Panthers, absolutely, they had two great signature victories this year, one against our arch nemesis, arch rivals, Penn State, after a 16-year lull of not playing each other. We played each other and we won that game. And yeah. Penn State is a great football program and a great team. Yeah. And then to beat Clemson at Clemson.
I was crazy. I was watching it and I thought to myself, they were right in there. And didn't the quarterback get knocked out that game?
Nate Peterson.
Yeah.
He actually played. I don't know if he got knocked out, but he was in. He had a great game that game. He actually was in my MBA class that I teach business marketing every summer.
Oh, that's cool.
What a really wonderful, nice kid, and what a great story. And he grew up in Florida. He ended up going to Tennessee, and things changed in Tennessee. And came to Pittsburgh, and he's made it a home. So really nice young man.
Who do they got this weekend?
Syracuse. So we're 7-4. We're hoping we can end the season 8-4. While you'd like to always see get the 9 or 10 wins, we'll take 8-4 this year, and chalk it up with a couple signature victories, and hopefully we'll go to a decent bowl game.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You know, maybe. There's a bowl. Isn't there a bowl game in Charlotte?
There is. The early predictions are we're heading to the we're going to the Pinstripe Bowl.
Where's that at?
That's in New York City.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
Oh, I love it. You know, it's drivable. You can make it up there. It'd be fun. Do a little Christmas shopping. Post.
There you go. There you go. Well, listen, get it done. Get that kid motivated. You know, give him a pat on the back. And, you know, you want to go to a bowl game, you better give him an A.
That's right.
You know, that's between you and me. Hey, Greg, I really appreciate it. I'll tell you what, I'm going to be up that way, like I said, in February. And I'll reach out before then. Be cool. I'd love to, you know, I'll probably be with my son and maybe, you know, swing over and show him the university and introduce
him. Come by, and we'll be happy to show you everything we have here and get up to buy you lunch or dinner or at least a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Well, as usual, your insight is dead nuts on, and I just think it's great. I'm really glad that... you were able to do this, and I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Thanks so much for having me. Thanksgiving.
You too, buddy. All right, man.
Okay.
See ya. Okay. Take care. Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. A reminder, this episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all of your custom content needs. My thanks go out to Greg Kotikia. I think that you would all agree that his perspective on the world is pretty unique. He sees it from an academic standpoint. He sees it from an entrepreneurial standpoint, a traditional business perspective. He's in touch with a new generation of worker, and he understands how the landscape has changed. He understands what it takes going forward to connect. So he's a wonderful guy. If you want to hear more from him, actually read his column in the next issue of Canvas Magazine. He does a wonderful job for us. He's a great friend, and I just can't thank him enough. My thanks go out to all of you, and my warmest wishes for a wonderful holiday season. And all the best in 2017. Let's get it done together. Let's have fun and onward and upward. Take care.